Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, December 23rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guide system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. That app also lets you email questions from basically any page, and they will get sent to Jeannie, and she'll be able to address them for you and either send you an email with the response or address it on the internet show. Lots of resources within the app, and as I've mentioned many times, it's one of the most powerful tools I've ever encountered for improving my life quality and relationships. So we hope people do all of those things soon and often, because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they do that. And it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate when people do that, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, and our intention with this work is to be of service. So how can we be of service? What's on your mind on this Friday, December 23rd, 2 days before the Christian holiday of Christmas, and right in the middle of Hanukkah, and probably a host of other holidays around the globe from different traditions? We've been working on the Way of Mastery, and since this will be the final show in this calendar year, we will not finish the Way of Mastery, but we might get to finishing reading of Lesson 24 today. I made an attempt to do a blog post yesterday and realized how long it's been since I've done a blog post. And the blog post was just a way to announce that the audio files of the shows that are going to be played next week when I'm not here, each of which contains some form of either me processing my own emotional upset or reading through worksheets I had actually done, they're now available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website under the page titled Best of Audio Files. So if you'd like to get a head start, you can go there and listen to them. One of the things I like about accessing them through the MindShiftersAcademy.org website is that there are three little dots after you download the file, or if you're on the website and you hit play to just play it from the website, there's three little dots on the right-hand side. If you click those, it will let you choose a playback speed that's faster, 1.25, 1.5, or 2x the speed. And the science research indicates that our minds can comprehend speech much faster than the average person talks. And so if you go to access those files and do a playback, I encourage you to experiment with what's the rate of replay that's most comfortable for you. You can actually listen to it in half the time, or you can listen to it in three quarters of the time, or you can listen to it in real time. Again, those shows are on the top six or seven files on the page marked Best of Audio Files on the website MindShiftersAcademy.org. And as always, when we put stuff out there, we encourage comments, questions, answers, testimonials, feedback. So if you make use of that resource and you've got a comment for us, we'd love to hear it. And and please reach out. Stay in touch. Let us know how it's working for you to either have those audio files replayed or to have us doing the Way of Mastery here on Mind Shifters Radio. Nobody's got a hand up right now, and I was looking at Lesson 24 in the Way of Mastery, and I was talking to some people the other day about how, or it's Lesson 34 in the Way of Mastery. I was talking to people about how disruptive some of these thoughts are or questions are to someone who's had basically the opposite of that programmed into them from the time they had language. And I want to encourage all of us to use the tools, use breath work, use the reality management worksheet, use EFT tapping, use Byron Katie's questions. Byron Katie's discovered through her spiritual journey that she only suffers when she believes in her negative thoughts. So her process and her worksheet are all about questioning every negative thought to deeper and deeper levels. And as I've talked about, as I read these last few chapters of Way of Mastery and the rather radical observations they're encouraging us to make, I understand that And I can hear it echoing in my mind, the thoughts and the refutations of various people that I've worked with over the years who will be railing at this, shouting, screaming, throwing the book down, arguing against statements that are made in these books, like, you are God, you are the creation, you are the flow of life, you have within you all power under heaven and earth to create your experience of life. And I work with a lot of people that I know will just spit venom at words like that rather than look at them with childlike curiosity and invite themselves to experience their lives differently. So if you have any of that coming up for you, please be willing to use the tools rather than just assume that your negative response is valid and accurate, or that your negative response is going to prompt you into any kind of an action, a behavior, or even a thought process that's going to be beneficial. Because the core of our work, even before we got to the Way of Mastery, the core of the work from the Course in Miracles and Dr. Michael Rice's work and the Reality Management Worksheet process and the Ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness, the core of it is that if I have any form of negative thought or negative emotion active in my mind, that means I am not perceiving accurately. There's a distorting filter or several filters over my perception. And if I take an action, or even allow myself to sit and steep in these thoughts when there's a negative thought or a negative emotion, I'm going to make my situation worse. I can't make it more positive by acting from the negative thoughts or negative emotions. I just lashed on the time, and I've talked about this before. I was in college, and I heard people talk about the book Autobiography of a Yogi, written by Paramahansa Yogananda. And I looked into the book at that time, and it was just so radically different than the Catholic upbringing that I'd had that I couldn't bring myself to read the book at all. It was just repulsive, anger-inducing, etc. And then, not too many years ago, I had already been well invested in the internet show and working with Michael Rice's group and hosting the Tuesday support group for years. And I got introduced to the work of Michael Singer, and he wrote the two books, The Untethered Soul and the Surrender Experiment. And in both of those, wonderful books, I thoroughly enjoyed his books. And in both of them, he talked about how Paramahansa Yogananda's book changed his life and fueled so many of his insights and his own good personal work. And so I was decades away from my college years and my feeling of revulsion, and so I decided to pick up the book. And I picked up the book, and lo and behold, wonderful stuff. Oh, I was just loving it. And I was reading along merrily, and one day, I remember I was at home, and it was in the evening, and I was reading, and I just felt like I was going to throw up. I felt sick to my stomach, and I felt like I needed to throw the book down and run away. Now, because I'd been doing this work so long, I realized, oh, all of that's happening inside me, and it's being created inside me. I wonder what I'm doing to create such a feeling of revulsion and nausea and So I did some EFT tapping and breath work, and I did a couple worksheets on it, and I realized that what was happening was I had reached the point in the book where Paramahansa Yogananda was basically talking about having his guru, his teacher, perform miracles that were the kind of things that, in my training and history, only God and God's son Jesus could do. And so there was a part of my mind arguing against this, saying, this is blasphemy, this is wrong. Now we're talking about years after I've already, I'll use the phrase, outgrown my Catholic upbringing. And I had been studying in spirituality and doing meditation and doing other kinds of visualization and, you know, reading Buddhist texts and for decades. But the old vibrations, the old, you know, negative warning signs, the old conditioned thoughts and trainings and beliefs were in there getting resonated. And it took a number of rounds of EFT tapping, and it took some worksheets and a little journaling before it popped out. Oh, if I read this book, if I think this is true, there was a part of me that was saying, that's going to be like an attack on my parents and grandparents because they were Catholic and they raised me Catholic. And the Catholic Church says, you know, only Jesus can do miracles, et cetera. And if anybody else does something that would be miraculous, we call it, it must be, you know, the devil or whatever. And after I got in touch with that and did the worksheets and breathed through it, I realized that's kind of silly. And then it freed me up to pick up the book and enjoy the rest of it. And my hunch is there is some content in these last few chapters in the Way of Mastery that's going to do that for people, if it hasn't already. And I just have to encourage you to keep a large portion of your consciousness focused on your internal experience as you listen along to this reading or as you read it on your own. Because if you don't, the old stuff, the old traumas, the old conclusions, the old belief energies will get activated, and they will drive your behavior. And if you let the past drive your behavior and you think you're living in the present moment, it's pretty much like putting blinders on and getting behind the wheel of a car. It's not going to end well. Fortunately for most of us, the negative impacts are not as dramatic as would be if I, you know, crashed into something or someone with my car. And yet, the negativity is still there. The guaranteed negative impact is still what would be experienced. I can't do well in my life if I'm letting myself be driven by past events. So we're in the Way of Mastery, lesson 34. We're in the last few pages. Because of the dynamic that I just mentioned, I didn't even reread lesson 33. I just went on to lesson 34. And the last segment that we read in lesson 34 was a message about what is to come. And what they're basically saying is the invitation is to take up your rightful place by stepping into the full commitment for the extraordinary expression of the Christ mind in the physical realm. And what they're saying is it's going to happen. It's been unfolding for many, many, many years. And they're talking about the birthing of the Christ mind. They're talking about the birthing of Shanti Christo as the way of becoming the Christ. They're talking about the unfolding of life, as they've talked about all through this book, that whatever unfolds is perfect just as it is, because that's life. It's unfolding. And it's perfect until a human mind comes along and labels it as bad or wrong. The next section is titled, You Have Come with a Mission. And the text reads, Indeed, then, beloved friends, you cannot have an ordinary day any longer. You might as well accept the fact that you have come with a mission. You are a bringer of light, a bringer of a new day or a new dawn. You are that which extends the love of creation into creation by your willingness to let the light transfigure your humanity. Your humanity is transfigured as you embrace your humanity and see it all as sacred. If you haven't done it before, I encourage you to look up the lyrics from the words of the words to the song Holy Now by Peter Mayer. And it's a song about how when he used to go to church and the preacher would say the words and everybody would kneel and bow, today the only difference is everything is holy now. It's a beautiful song, and the refrain is, everything, everything, everything is holy now. The Way of Mastery just said, your humanity is transfigured as you embrace your humanity and see it all as sacred. It's all whole. It's all holy. It's all part of the one. The text goes on and says, for the spell of illusion is to believe that life as a body-mind is a mistake. That is a fearful world that will create your experience of a fearful world, that will create you as believing that there are mistakes and that this is wrong and that is wrong, and that will set you against the flow of life. Bell of illusion is to believe that life as a body-mind is a mistake, that it is a fearful world, that one is limited and small, that the only thing you can do is put all your energy into trying to survive, that all you can do is block your feelings and pretend that they are not there in an attempt to deny the power of the Christ that you are, the power to bring the miracle of love and remembrance and atonement to each moment of your life. You can bring the power of the miracle of love, the miracle of life expressing in form. You can bring the power of remembrance. You can bring the power of atonement. And another way to say that word is at-one-ment, recognizing it's all one thing. The text goes on and says, you are indeed unlimited. Your true nature, your capital S self, your consciousness is unlimited in all ways forever. The mind that serves the Holy Spirit is the Christ mind, the mind of Abba, the self, capital S self, of your very soul. They are all the same. There is no separation. The separation business is a dream. It's a hallucination. It's a chimera. It's an illusion. You are indeed unlimited in all ways forever. And the mind that serves the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, Ruka Dukucha, the breath of eternal life itself, consciousness itself, that mind is the Christ mind. It is the mind of the Creator, of Abba. It is the capital S self of your very soul. They are all the same. And the mind that serves the Holy Spirit is indeed unlimited forever. And this capital S self, this essence of who you are, is part of an extraordinary family. The lineage that can indeed be traced back through the Jewish nation, the Jewish families, and can be traced back even before that lineage, that family, that nation was even birthed. It shapes itself back through Egypt, back through Persia. It has some roots in ancient India, and it indeed has its roots beyond the physical earth. So please, watch the conscious logical mind that wants to identify with words like Jewish or Egyptian or Persian, because the essence they're talking about, the consciousness, the awareness they're talking about, as they've talked to us about this through this entire book, began before there was any physical material in the universe at all. Your essence, your consciousness, is part of the one consciousness. It existed before there was any physicality. Any dust, any particles, any stars, any moons, any anything. The next section is titled, You Are Incarnating Christ Into the World. And the text reads, You, therefore, are not alone, and your role should never be minimized by you. Please understand that the culmination of the way of knowing has been the desire and the attempt to invite you more and more and more and more deeply into knowing the capital T truth of who you are and what you are here to do. Inviting you into awakening as Christ. Not a person as a state of mind, as a state of consciousness. As a consciousness that's aware of its connection to everyone and everything. The text goes on and says, And yes, we know that the mind hits its points of fear, and it must plateau out for a week, or a year, or 10 lifetimes before it is willing to step further. And yet you are free. Even in the midst of your deepest fears, you are free to say yes to transfiguration. For darkness holds no power over light. It is always when you are at the point of your greatest sense of darkness or your greatest feeling that the light just cannot quite get into you, that you could not possibly ever be enlightened, it is at that moment that you need only invite the light. And in that moment that you invite it, the light begins to transform the darkness. It is when you are at your edge of darkness that the dawn is but a breath away. As you transfigure your humanity, you are transfiguring the energy field of humankind, pure and simple. Course in Miracles says, when you are healed, you are never healed alone. Course in Miracles also says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do here today. And the ego can make that into something grand. But the Christ mind knows that's just the natural consequence of how everything is connected. The moment you feel at your darkest, you need only invite the light. And instantly the light begins to transform the darkness. It is when you are at your edge of darkness that the dawn is but a breath away. As you transfigure your humanity, your little sense of self awakens to the little S self, that your connection to everything. As you do that, you're transforming the field, the entire energy field of humankind, pure and simple. In that moment, you are incarnating the mind of Christ into the world. You are resurrecting and awakening the dead into eternal life. Take up then your rightful place and begin to give up hiding your light under a bushel. It is indeed time to start standing up to be counted as one who is committed to the transfiguration of human consciousness through the lineage of the Christ mind, pure and simple. The next section is titled, Step Forward. The text reads, you are extraordinarily important. You must begin to discipline the mind to not perceive yourself as a small part, not to perceive yourself as separate from one another, to begin to take action to create the lines of communication even in the third dimensional realm. It is time for you as individuals to step forward in the birthing of Shanti Christo, instead of waiting upon the handful that seems to have gone a little further ahead. You are that one. You, the hearer of these words. If you will but step forward, the whole power of the lineage will support you. So the invitation is indeed bold, and the stakes have always been high. It is the great dream to transform the dream of separation into the dream of perfect remembrance. You are not small. You are not alone. Many of you are beginning to be more deeply aware that you too hear me. Let that process continue and deepen. Become an equal conduit that extends the atonement through the mind of Christ, through that which is called Shanti Christo, and extends it through you. For this work to reach its fulfillment in the quickest possible time, it requires the invitation of this lineage to you, a part of the lineage. The question is posed, where can you step forward with greater boldness? Where can you step forward with greater boldness and have the support and light of the lineage move through it? Where can you drop the pebble into the pond that radiates the vibration of this lineage through you out into the world? The text reminds us, for the world holds no power over you. The text reads, I hope in this simple sharing that your mind has been a little shaken and you've been brought to a deeper stillness, that your mind has been brought back to the reality of what attracted you to this vibration in the first place. For in that moment, your heart was thrown open through the portal of initiation. Your soul is what has attracted you back to me, back to this teaching. And your soul has always known the capital T truth. And it has simply answered the call. Yet it takes vigilance and discipline to always remember each day not to fall asleep again. For the temptation of the world is just that, to begin to think of all those walking asleep in the world that have greater knowledge than you. And so, since so many of them are asleep, maybe being asleep is the way to be. It is not the way to be. So that paragraph, again, is so important because it says, it takes vigilance and discipline to always remember each day not to fall asleep again. This is like what I talk about in the work and will be reiterated numerous times next week in the replays I'm playing. My commitment to spend more of my mind energy scanning my body for the earliest warning signs of upset, and then recognizing, oh, if I'm upset, my thinking is in error, and taking a breath and turning the focus inside and then figuring out what thoughts am I using to create this negative emotion? What dynamic am I focused on that my mind is telling me is how somebody else is creating my upset? What goal am I holding? And what happens when I cancel all of that and ask to be shown something else? That vigilance and discipline must be cultivated, because it's working against the conditioning that has so much momentum in this culture, in each and every one of us, through our culture, through our families, through whatever education system we've been put into. That's why it takes vigilance and discipline to always remember each day not to fall asleep again. In the work of Mind Shifters groups and Mind Shifters Radio, not to fall asleep and believe somebody outside of me is causing my upset. Somebody outside of me is causing my fear. Somebody outside of me is causing my confusion or hurt. Somebody outside of me is causing my anger. It takes vigilance and discipline to always remember each day, each moment in the day, not to fall asleep, stay awake. For the temptation of the world is just that, to get you to begin to think that all of those people walking around asleep in the world, they have greater knowledge than you. And since so many of them are asleep, maybe being asleep is the way to go. It is not the way to go. Just because the vast majority of people in the family or the culture act a certain way does not mean it is your path to liberty or peace. Just observe, just be vigilant, just notice how many of those people who seem to have the money, the relationship, the careers, just notice how much time they spend in blame, in tension, in always staying busy, in doing rather than being. The text goes on and says, for all those who are sleeping will be transfigured in the twinkling of an eye. The sleeping call out in their slumber for someone to stir them from their sleep by modeling and expressing and communicating the quickening vibration of light, which is the presence of creation. Indeed, you have chosen to come into this dimension as a part of a very grand work that is going on multidimensionally. You are indeed part of a rather large family. Many of you will continue to deepen your ability to communicate with me. Honor and extend love to one another. Recognize that you have come not to live ordinary lives, but to play out the greatest drama ever enacted upon the human plane. That is your role, your function, your purpose, and your life. It has indeed been a great honor to be the one selected by the Creator to undergo the laser beam purification called the crucifixion and the resurrection, but to do this as part of a much larger picture. It has been a great honor to be the one through whom you have opened your heart to the love of creation. It has been an honor to serve as a Savior and Messiah, but in truth, that is not the end. For the end can come only when perfect equality as Christ is established in all hearts and minds. Join with me, then, in this great work. Join with me. Do not shy away from that which your heart would call you unto. Rather, dive in deeper. I will never leave you and will never take my hand from this work until all is indeed completed. I extend love to you always, and I participate with all minds called to awaken. I am but your brother and your friend, ever dedicated to revealing that which the Creator would reveal to you through me, in just the right way, at just the right time. You are as I am. And together we transfigure humanity. I was a prototype for what is to come, an expression in space and time of what all of you are destined to be. Yet that destiny is but the remembrance of what you have always been beyond the veil of the illusions. Peace is with you always. Hear its call. Accept the invitation, and let us continue in the greatest story ever told. Amen. Just breathing, softening, keeping hopefully a large portion of your mind energy focused on your body, your thoughts, your emotions. What does that stir up in you? To be called into action in a lineage that goes back before time. And it has one of Guy Finley's favorite things to talk about is how everything is in scale. So at one level of scale, it's just sitting in bliss and learning to be okay just being and learning to have gratitude for the fact that your heart is beating and your breath is moving and your food is digesting. And at another level of scale, it means looking for opportunities to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. At another level of scale, it means keeping a part of your conscious mind focused on your internal state where you carry your physical sensations and your emotions, and at the earliest warning sign of any kind of tension, you interrupt the process of thought, the conditioned process of thought, and you step into a process like the reality management worksheet. And if you choose to do that, you will notice that you spend the tiniest fraction of time in your life in those negative emotional experiences and in the pattern of negative thoughts. So at different levels of scale, each of us will be called to different levels of activity. The essence of which is, can you accept the invitation to be a conduit for the love of creation, for the extension of the creative energy in form, with compassion, with joy, with bliss, with excitement? And how is that done? By allowing all things, by embracing all things, by accepting all things, by trusting all things, by recognizing that the flow of life is this extension of this creative energy, and you're in it, and it's perfect just the way it is. And that when you decide to judge it and rail against it, you're creating your own experience of life in that moment. And you're not seeing clearly. You're not in direct, what Michael Rice would call the spiritual faculty of perception. You are creating a false perception, as we've all been trained to do in our families and our cultures. One of those lines from an earlier worksheet that was so powerful that when I first got exposed to this work was, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. Now, it's been modified slightly over the years, and whether download from Michael or feedback from others, but now the worksheet has a line on it that says, if I'm in pain, my thinking is in error. This lesson is calling me to a vigilance for that level of observation. At one level of scale, I want to be every moment of every day vigilant about what I'm creating with my belief structures and my thoughts and my resonating energies from the past of traumas. I want to understand that if I'm experiencing something that I don't like, something other than this bliss state, something other than this conscious awareness of my true nature as love, if I'm in anything like that, I'm not seeing things clearly. That experience can only be generated through this process we call perception. And we've talked about this at length. People like Anil Seth has powerful videos helping us understand the latest science on perception and how active it is. And each and every one of us is actively creating everything we hear, see, and feel. We're creating our experience of it. The CIA website has a page where they discuss it, a chapter of a book titled, Why Can't I See What Is There to Be Seen? And the study indicates my perception does not record reality. My perception constructs reality, which is why I can have such a different experience in the moment when I'm standing right next to other people and we're all ostensibly, our senses would tell us, yeah, we're all right there. We're all seeing the same thing. We're all hearing the same thing. We're all feeling the same thing. And we know from our own experience that's not true. 50 people sit in a movie theater, watch the same movie. But are they really? No, because some people come out and think it was a great movie. Some people come out and they didn't like it at all. Some people leave before the movie's over. If they were all having the same experience, that couldn't happen. So they're all having different experiences, even though they're all sitting in the same movie theater. How does that happen? It's the process of perception. It's what in this work, in the third lesson, they let us know that our process of perception is false, and their definition for forgiveness is the dismantling of perception. Because they understand in this work that perception creates this, what they refer to in this work as the veil. It creates false images. It keeps me from seeing the truth of life. It keeps me from seeing the shimmering radiance of the creative energy expressing in form. So this work is calling us to vigilance, calling us to stepping up our game. And it's an invitation. You can accept the invitation or you can reject it. Just like Guy Finley says, there's only one curriculum. There's only one true game in town. You don't get to decide what the game is or how the rules are. It's the game and these are the rules. You do get to decide whether or not you study the curriculum, you learn the lessons, or you delay learning the lessons. But there's only one point to all of this, and that is, as Guy Finley says, there's this unseen cosmic curriculum. And the whole point of the curriculum is to educate the soul, educate the mind, educate the being. Educate them to what? Educate them to the existence of the wisdom of the Creator that created the curriculum. To put us back in direct connection with our true nature. To awaken us to this experience that we're all connected and we're all one and we're all part of the same mind. So here we are in the last show that I'll be doing live in this year with the Way of Mastery, one lesson away from completing our reading. And if you're like most of us, you're finding this quite challenging. If you find it that you're giddy with inspiration, that's the same thing as being challenged to fear. Just observe it. Just work with it. Just stay tuned into your physical, emotional responses and let them be the guide for whether or not you're understanding what's being offered. Because if you understand actually what's being offered, if your true self starts to awaken and get it, there won't be fear. There won't be anxiety. The fear is a product of the ego. The anxiety is a product of the ego. The anger is a product of the ego. Judgment is a product of the ego. And we're being asked to understand that the ego is a very simple tool, a very simple servant. It's given to us to help us navigate through life in the physical realm. It was never designed to be our master. It doesn't hold any wonderful answers for us. It doesn't need to be attacked. It doesn't need to be demolished. It just needs to be seen as it is for its true nature and its value. Very, very limited value. And when we do that, we get to use it to our benefit. We get to see it as a useful tool, like a hammer or a saw. We don't use the hammer and the saw for everything as we're building the house, and yet both of those tools can be very, very useful when we're trying to build a house. So we want to be vigilant for any fearful or angry-based response that says we should attack or demolish our ego, and understand that that's as false as trying to make the ego be our master. It has a very limited utility, and yet it has a utility. And each of us needs to question for ourselves, when, what hour, will we wake up and see the limited value of the ego, see its true nature, and refrain from what we've been trained to do, which is to make it our master, and just allow it to be there in the toolkit for when it might be of value to us to learn how to drive home and how to start the car when it's having mechanical problems. But it's not there to be our master. It's not there to be our guide in life, in the extending of the good, the holy, and the beautiful, in our relationships with our fellow brothers and sisters. It's not meant to be our master. So thank you to everyone who's been on this ride so far this year, reading through the Way of Mastery and joining us for these presentations. I hope it's continuing to be of value. I strongly encourage you to tune into the shows for next week and or go to the website mindshiftersacademy.org and look for the page that says Best of Audio Files, because all the shows that will be played in my absence next week are on that page. They're the first six or seven shows or files listed there. And I wish you all happy holidays, safe travel, fun, joy, bliss, whatever you can generate. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a safe time. I'm not sure what your weather's like up there. It's 4 degrees here.
Yeah, we're in the negatives. Well, we'll do that. Merry Christmas to you and your family. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you in the new year. Blessings.
All right. Blessings. Bye. So, welcome everybody to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Friday, December the 23rd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And if you go to our website, whyagain.org, and you click on the Start Here button in the top left corner, then it will take you to a page. The first two things you'll see are two new videos. One helps you to navigate. It's about an hour long, and it will help you navigate the website. The second one is to help you navigate the app. And then if you scroll down, then you'll see all of the other worksheets and things. And put those tools to work in your life. If you click on shop, you'll notice that the shop is now totally different. And thank you, Susan Giles, for helping us to get all that going. And I think it's everything's working okay there. If you run into something that's not, please let me know. We also have Heartland Fundraiser. You can click and get information on that as well. If you're not part of our mailing list, please sign up. I'll be sending out just another brief one, just given some of the updates that have happened since we sent one out a couple weeks ago. And most of it has to do with the work and what all's going on there. So if you want to be on our mailing list, just click on whyagain.org and then scroll down to the bottom and sign in to be on the mailing list. Or drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know. Same email address if you find something that doesn't work or that you think would be better located somewhere else. Let me know that too. And Michael and I will be live next week. I will be playing the shows for Dr. Tim for the first hour, but the second hour will be live.
I hope we'll be live,
buddy. Live on the show. We hope you have a Merry Christmas, though, and we will get into the second hour. Welcome, Michael.
Sweet. Thank you, dear heart. Awesome work on the website and the sale products. You know, if you've got some money to spend before the end of the year that you want to donate, if you want to support us by getting a really good price on both physical DVDs, CDs, and free streaming that goes with them for about the price, just a couple of bucks more than the price of streaming alone. So a way to share the work, pass it on, extend it to someone else. And delighted that you're here. We're having a heat wave. I don't know if you've looked at the thermometer, Jeannie, recently, or the weather app, but we just went up from 3 degrees to 4 degrees. So, hey, we're rocking here. I understand everybody that I've talked to this morning is in a deep freeze. Talked to some friends out in Arkansas, and they're down in the sub-zeros overnight. They were calling for it to go down to minus 5. I don't think it went that low here, but definitely one of those once-in-a-generation storms coming through. So we hold everybody safe and sound. I hear there are a number of people without power, unfortunately. So challenging times. And we're glad you're here. Glad you're joining us to be part of this conversation. And Machini, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
There are no hands
questions
up and no
from
questions
the app.
In the chat room. Nope. I checked that before. Oh, wow. We just had two hands go up at the exact same time.
So all right.
The first one is area code 780. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Yes, it's Jake calling from Canada. How's it going?
Hey, we're rocking. How are you, Jake? What part of Canada?
Western Canada. We're sending you down there. I know where you live. I think you're in Arkansas or somewhere. We're sending you cold weather right now, so just don't blame us.
You,
okay.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Well, actually,
messenger.
Our teaching center's in Missouri, right on the Arkansas line, but we are now in Bristol, Virginia, a little further east, but it's the whole swath. So we got it. Thank you, Canada.
You're welcome.
Hey.
You're welcome.
So what's on your mind today? How can we support you? Glad to be hearing from you.
I'm a fellow Canadian. My question. Are you? Well.
Yes. Yeah, I was born and raised in Ontario.
Okay, cool. I'm in Western Canada, so awesome. I do have a question for both of you. I mean, it's interesting. I find that there's a lot of people who are dying suddenly. And just put quotes on that. And my question is that during the grieving process, I just wondered if, you know, the forgiveness is a big part of it. But when people are in shock of somebody dying suddenly, when is their time, well, maybe there isn't time, to do the forgiveness thing? Or the grieving process, like, there's no set time for it. But is it really important that forgiveness now that's in the grieving process? Like be part of it?
Well, I have a variety of thoughts in that regard, but I'll start out going back to a woman that I worked with. This actually goes back, about 40 years ago. I had a practice in South Florida. And there was a woman in her mid-60s who... Her father was ill, was in his 90s, and his passing was imminent, but the word death was not allowed in the family. And we worked over a period of a couple of years, and this was an issue she worked on several times until she became courageous enough to go home and speak to mom and dad and, you know, speak about the elephant in the room. Dad is dying, and we need to deal with that. And it created a tremendous amount of upset within the family system when she did that. However, as a result of that and doing the forgiveness work and really working to be the space of love through all the trauma that came up in response to her introduction of that idea or her speaking of that idea, she heard the words from her father for the first time in her life. This is a woman in her mid-60s. She heard the words from her father for the first time in her life, I love you. She'd never heard it before. And they processed through the whole family and did forgiveness work together. And the upshot of that was that when he passed, she was holding one hand on one side of his bed. Two children were holding her hands and then the other child's hand, and her mother was on the other side of the bed holding his other hand. And his passing became, she said, one of the most beautiful family experiences that she'd ever had. And she said she had a cleaner, clearer, more connected relationship with her father after he passed than when he was alive. And I could tell you several stories along those lines where people who'd done their forgiveness work went consciously to participate in someone's passing and did not experience it as a traumatic event. And my offering is that...
You're breaking up. Sorry, sir.
Oh, my apology. I'm not sure why that is.
I can't hear you.
Is that any better?
No.
Can you hear me now?
Still breaking up.
I'll tell you what, give me 1 second. I'm going to change the headsets. Maybe there's something.
You must be on a phone or
wrong
something
with
like that.
Give me 1 second. Ginny, can you break in and tell him to hold for a second?
No. Sure. Can you hear me okay?
or Jake, Wi-Fi or something like that. I don't know. Sorry, I can't hear you.
Jake, can you hear me? I think, Michael, I think it's on his end because you were clear, and he's now disconnected, so I don't know if he's got a connection issue. Maybe he'll call right back in. But I could hear you fine, and he didn't seem to be able to hear me when I was talking to him either. So I think it must have been something on his end. Hopefully he'll call right back in. We'll give him just a minute, and if he doesn't call back in, then we'll go to our second caller. But, well, you may want to complete the – oh, he did call back in. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
Yes.
Yeah, I was talking to you, and you weren't hearing me either, and then you disappeared off the switchboard. So Michael's changing earphones to – or headsets to see if it's any clearer. But anyway, he'll be right back with us and complete that.
Glad you called
back. Thank you. You're welcome.
So can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Awesome. Okay. So what was the last thing that you could hear clearly? And I'll pick up from there in my conversation.
It was about the person that you're talking about regarding how forgiveness worked. And it was about the death thing. And,
right. So the family is gathered around the deathbed. Mm-hmm. And none of them, mother, daughter, grandchildren, experienced it as a traumatic event. And I could tell you several other stories of people who, having done forgiveness work, were able to be with the passing of a loved one and did not experience it as a painful or a traumatic event or something to grieve. Certainly there was the desire, I wish they were here, but there wasn't the trauma and drama to work through that many people experience at the passing of a loved one. And my take in having worked with people in that particular arena, so to speak, for the last 50 years is that the level of trauma that someone experiences in someone's passing is a result of the unresolved issues that individual has. One, within themselves about death in general, and two, in particular, with the issues they've got unresolved with the person who's passing. And when my experience with people, and I'll say this with myself, my mother passed about 5 years ago now, and we were extremely close. I mean, my whole life we were extremely close. And her passing was, for me, a joyful event. She was ready. She was finished. She was 94, and she was ready to go. And it was like, so, Mom, you know, have at it, and we hold the space for the next level of your journey. And there's actually a little symbol, something that I had made for her decades ago. Some friends of mine that I was in business with were into arts and crafts. I made a little, you know, fired piece of pottery for her, and I found a similar piece of pottery, and that actually I can look at it right now, sits at the end of my bed, and it's kind of my reminder and connection with my mom. And I look at it, and you know, on a regular basis, and it's always just, oh, hey, how you doing, touching into her energy and experiencing her presence and her love in this present moment. So my bottom line in that would be that if I deal with everything that's in me, and of course everything's a tall order, but if I deal with the unresolved issues that I have with every individual, then whatever that individual is about, does, stays, goes, is acting crazy or acting wonderfully, I'm not traumatically impacted by that because there's no trauma in me. If there is trauma in me, then I'll be traumatically impacted by many, many different things, or I'll believe that I've been traumatically impacted by many things, but those things aren't the cause of the trauma at all. It's what I'm holding. And then as far as, you know, I still lament, I would still love to be able to put my arms around my mom and hug her and sit and process. I mean, she loved this work, and we would spend hours and hours and hours processing family issues and such. And I would love to do that. But as opposed to it being a situation where I miss her, it was, that would be wonderful. And the connection I've got is awesome without that. One of the things, like, for instance, we're raising our granddaughter. She's now four. And I know that a lot of children are, and I'll use the word very selectively, brainwashed into structuring a reality in their minds about missing someone. And, you know, we've traveled a lot, so not as much as we used to, but we never say to our granddaughter, oh, did you miss me? Like, you know, as if I need to have something from her that's, we've never even intimated such a thing. But if people have a structure in their mind called I miss you, and it involves pain and tears and trauma and loss, and then when someone isn't there, then all those things are experienced, and we project, we think it's because they're not there, but that's not
right.
Why we're experiencing that. We're experiencing because it's in us. So when I apply forgiveness to those things and remove them, I remove them, and they're just not there to be experienced. And so, like, for instance, I've often gone to, like, I recently had a friend that fellow used to book my workshops. He used to live at my center. He was a music director there. We were very connected for several decades. And when his wife called me and said, you know, he's sick, he's, you know, they're not expecting him. They're in hospice. He's got less than 24 hours. I got in the car and headed over there, not to lament with her, not to suffer with her, but to be the space of active love for his passing and for her healing at whatever would be going on for her as he passed. Ended up, you know, within a couple of hours of getting there, we did some hands-on work, and he was back and rocking. And 48 hours later, the hospice people came in and said, yeah, you can't stay here anymore. You're not eligible for hospice. You're not sick enough. Unfortunately, in transferring to a rehab center so he could do some rehab to go home, he contacted COVID and a couple of days later was gone. But to me, if one goes to, let's say, a funeral, we can go with our own pain and suffering and join with someone else who's in pain and suffering and redouble the pain and suffering, or we can do the work to relieve ourselves of pain and suffering and show up as human beings, as the space of conscious, active, present love that we're designed to be, and we can uplift the person in suffering. We can support them in forgiving and in letting loose of the pain and suffering of their own lives and of their generations. And I think we can uplift each other and give each other that gift. Does that make sense of where you're going with this?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, because yeah. There was unfinished stuff with my mother, too, when she passed on. So didn't get a chance to resolve it. But I'm kind of like not over it, but I'm just still, it still comes up once in a while.
That would be perfect topics for worksheets. That would be where you'd want to dig in, clean that stuff up. And what you'll find is that, you know, my take is, you know, my background's in physics, and based in my physics training, what I know is the only thing that exists is energy, which means we must be energy. And that energy is eternal. We must be eternal. However, if I hold some sort of unresolved energetic dynamic and the subtle energy of my mother shows up in my space, it's going to resonate whatever's in me in my quote-unquote file on mom. And instead of experiencing the purity of her being that shows up to connect with me, to communicate with me, what I'll tend to do is experience what's unresolved in me that's resonated by her presence, by the energetic presence of her being. And so as I relieve myself of those things, as I forgive those things, what I'm going to find is I'm going to have the ability to connect, to hear from her. And instead of projecting what's unresolved in me, I just get to experience the pure presence of her being. And it's an awesome gift to give yourself. It's taking a big step forward in responsibility compared to the way the world looks at things, but it makes such a difference. Is Julie Haverstick by any chance on the show today, Jeannie?
No, she's not.
No. Well, Julie is a woman who's taught our work in the school system in Dayton, Ohio back, four decades ago. She now lives at Heartland, our teaching center. And she was there for the passing of both of her parents, and having done a huge amount of work, was just able to be with them passing. Her dad in particular, she was sitting beside the bed half asleep when he passed, and it woke her up. And what woke her up was the presence of his energy, his love, that she experienced being in her heart physically as she's sitting beside his bed. And she said the words in her mind, looking at her dad, realizing, you know, that he'd passed, or thinking that he had, and asking, "Dad, are you here?" And she got a very clear reply. And the clear reply was, "I'm here. I am in your heart." And she shares that when she shared that several times over the years on the show and at our teaching center at Heartland. And when she shares that, everybody gets it. I mean, it's like the energetic alignment she has with that truth, with that experience, touches everybody that hears it. And I think it's part of opening the space for those deeper levels of healing and ultimately the generational healing that needs to occur when you think about some of the attitudes toward people dying and look at, you know, what those attitudes have been in our family systems. Those attitudes, those energetic patterns, the suffering, the pain, especially when there's been a traumatic loss, you know, an accident or a sudden death, there's a lot of unresolved energetic dynamics that most people carry around in their genes, and starting to address them and work through them, I think, will change that whole process.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think I oftentimes tell a story about, imagine you've got a pair of twins in the womb, in utero, and one twin leaves the womb, and to the womb mate, pun intended, the child left in the womb, it's been a death. The child's gone. Gee, my twin is gone. But on the other side, a whole world is waiting for a birth, for the entry into this world of this child. And if you look into what people call a near-death experience, which is really a near-life experience, when clinical death occurs, all of the genetic trauma, all of the lifetime trauma of an individual that's stored in what we call the body, carbon-based memory, all of that shuts off in an instant. Clinical death occurs, that's gone. And a person gets not a near-death experience, that clinically their physiology dies, but if they're fortunate enough that they're resuscitated, that they come back, that they get a brainwave again, that they get the heart going, most of those people report this wondrous, and it's consistent across languages and cultures, this entryway into a pure field of love and a pure field of light. And in many cases, welcoming from friends and family who have passed. Now, for me, it comes to a sound. A lot of people, oh, yeah, that's ridiculous. That's just an hallucination of the mind. Well, if you really read the research, you really look at people who've, you know, no contact with it, no knowledge, their stories are so consistent and so persistent that, for me, it's raised to a standard of, there's no question when clinical death occurs, there is life. It's a birth into another dimension. And there are people there welcoming the same way as we welcome the child from the womb. We're in the womb of the universe, and there is a whole welcoming committee that's there, and life carries on. And I think that it's a sort of a self-centered cultural thing to want to stop that, to want to hold that back, to want to say, no, 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 you can't go because of me, as opposed to, I'm here to support you, enhance your life, and give you a boost into the next dimension from this side. I think that's the possibility. And it's a near-life experience. And when people come back from that near-life experience, when clinical death is ended by some sort of, you know, miraculous medical intervention or what have you, and some pretty amazing medicine out there, and a person comes back, those stories are so consistent. It happens so often. There's an interesting movie out there called Saved by the Light, if you haven't seen it. A friend of ours, Daniel Brinkley, was a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I know the person, though.
Yeah. So Daniel went through, you know, clinical death, and, you know, the movie is very powerful, the way it's put together. I really acknowledge Daniel for his courage at how he allowed him to write his part accurately and how mean and vicious a kid he was, and that basically he was a hired government killer. And when he went through that near-life experience, the transformation was monumental. And, you know, he's really, I mean, Daniel, after he went through that, and one of the things he had to process was his home trauma at having killed people, and he had to go back and deal with those killings that he had done. But he sat peace-side, and I'm saying this for the rest of our radio audience who might not know him as you do, but, you know, he sat with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vets in particular. He was a military man, and he just, that became part of his mission, was just sitting with these men and acknowledging who they were and being the exit support committee for them when they were dying. And what a gift to give. There's actually a group in Hawaii that does last time I saw it was a free course. At one time they paid, you had to pay for it, but the last time I saw it with COVID and all, it was a free course on becoming a death doula, someone who's there to support people in making that transition. And of course, to do that, you have to deal with everything in you about death. So it's a powerful healing process.
That's amazing. Amazing wisdom.
So I breathe with you. And along the way, if you choose to step in and do worksheets in that regard, we're here 100% for questions, support, and assisting you in moving through whatever needs to be moved through for you.
No, thank you very much for the opportunity. So, you know, for me myself, I actually, since my mother passed on 4 years ago, so I've been producing a grief newsletter, actually, in our local area, and send it out to people that have grief groups and various, yeah, hospice society, and it's been pretty, I think it's been really helpful for people on their journey, because I couldn't find any resources when I was in grief, and it was hard, so I decided just to do it. So I've been doing it for like four years.
That's awesome. And, what a gift to the community.
Even I put commercial in there, and I've got death doulas and people who do spiritual work too, so it's been quite rewarding, actually.
Sweet.
I don't find that, and it's free. I don't charge anything, and just say this is what's going on, and every month I do that. I should send you a copy of it, because I send those help people.
Please
about
do.
That. No, just for our local area, and I'll put my name on there. So yeah.
Well, if you create it for the local area, you know, you could always just expand the local area to include the earth. If you're doing it anyway, you know, who knows who you might, who knows who you might touch, and hopefully maybe some of the forgiveness work will be, you know, integrated and offered to create support for people who don't have any idea that there are resources available. You know, you look at the community you're in, and there is not a resource, and the resource you've offered is just, I mean, that's monumental. And so we support the effort. It's awesome.
You're welcome.
What a gift to give.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Roger. That gives me, I don't know, to keep on doing what I'm doing. So,
fabulous.
I find it. Yeah, I find it's really rewarding. So I don't know who I touch, but I'm just keep on doing. I think that's what we got to do. So
well,
we just don't know until our end days of who people we touched. So, right.
You never know. Actually, the fellow that I just mentioned who I went to be at his passing, just this was like within the last year, he used to book my workshops back in the early days, 40, 50 years ago. And one of the things he used to say to people when he was talking about booking me in different places around the country is he'd say that Michael Rice, if he got the chance, would do a workshop in a phone booth. And it's true. You know, you never, as you say, you never know when the person who's going to be, you know, take it to the whole next level is in front of you. And so I'm with you 100%. Put it out there, make it available, and you never know who you're going to touch. And, you know, to me, Yeshua 2,000 years ago, the physicist, said that a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And, of course, he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about humanity. And that it's only going to take a critical mass, a small number, the leavening, to elevate the whole of humanity to an experience that's so far beyond where most people are stuck. You know, it's like the difference between looking down into the past and the unresolved traumas that keep calling to us and the possibility of turning our attention in a totally different direction into what's beckoning us, what's inspiring us. If we can turn actually the word repent, that's what it really means. It doesn't, you know, on the level where we're creators and we hold trauma, we've got 360 degree vision. You can't turn away from it. But if you process through it, you can turn your thinking in another direction. And when you do, my experience has been there's a whole, what can I say? It's like the creative power of the universe is busy building instruments to express capabilities that have never been seen on the earth. And most people are paying attention and stuck in their dramas and their traumas. Actually, one of the songs that this gentleman I was speaking about that I went to be with him in his passing, he wrote was "Stuck in my story, my pain and my glory." And most people can't hear the inspiration that's coming from within them and the invitation to turn and embrace something else and bring it through and become, bring in an original creation, something new to the world. And so that's what I hear you're doing with the support group that you've got. And it's awesome. I think each of us has a purpose akin to that. And if we all start, you know, repenting, turning our attention another way, not the Greek idea of, oh, repent, you sinner, you, all that crap, but just being able to turn in another direction, being able to let go of the lower energy and bring through what we're really here to do. Oh, man, I don't think we can imagine what the world would be like, what shifts and changes would occur. It would be just monumental.
Yeah. Yeah.
So glad you're on the team.
You're welcome. I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for this wonderful wisdom you shared over the next last half hour. Just like listening, because sometimes you don't think or feel that there is no other way of other thinking. But, you know, when you get a person who are like-minded and they're thinking, it offers opportunity of a different angle of looking at things instead of one way that mean not, you might put yourself down and not work, but say, oh, there's another way of doing it. So basically there's roads or forks opening up in a road where your journey is, or whether it's a grief journey or other journeys that you're on your
exactly.
life. So, yeah.
I'm with you 200%. And the thought comes that if you would go ahead and send Jeannie a copy of your newsletter, and her email is Jeannie at whyagain.org. And what we'll do, I'll ask this of Jeannie. She does it, always does it, but we'll take this section of the radio show and separate it out and create a separate post on our website of it and send you a link.
Thanks.
So that if you want to re-listen to it or you want to share it with others, it's there to be shared.
Well, I'm very grateful for that. So Jeannie at whyagain.org.
Jeannie at whyagain.org. Uh-huh.
Awesome. I'll send it right away after this conversation.
Sweet.
As soon
sweet.
As I get it separated out, then I'll do a reply to your email and send you the link.
Yeah, it's, I'm really grateful for this opportunity. Like it says, it's all the various organizations where I live, where I live. So you'll find it where I live.
Sweet.
Yeah, and I don't have any preferences because I don't give any preferences to the people who are actually the groups that I'm actually promoting because it's just by date, right? So I don't go like, well, you're this type, I don't give a level of status to them. I just say it's in alphabetical order.
There it is.
Or here's the date, and that's it, and this is what it is. And yeah, so I got lots of good stuff from different various organizations. So yeah. Yeah,
awesome. Well, we'll look forward to receiving it. Thank you. And thank you. One of the beauties of this radio show is we get to interact with so many different people who have so many different perspectives and views and issues and questions, and each one of them opens a new space for us. So thank you for that question and the whole conversation, because it does give us the opportunity to serve on another level, and this becomes available as a resource for our community as well. So much appreciation.
Yeah, I'm grateful for both of you being part of my day that I created this morning, and I'm grateful for all the warm thoughts and love that you actually give to people to help them on their journey, and both of you, and I'm grateful for three things, and I'm grateful for just being in a moment. That's all we got.
All right. Well, blessings, and have a wondrous holy day season and the best year yet of your eternal life.
Yes, have a grateful season of blessings to both of you and people who are on the line and people who are listening to the show later on in archive. And it's been a wonderful, grateful experience. I'll be talking to you both soon.
Cool. Blessings. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I love these opportunities that come when somebody comes up with a question that just opens another space. So that's why we keep saying, put your hand up and talk to us. So, Jeannie, you've got another hand up, I understand.
We do, and I believe that this is Michael. It's 770. You are on the air.
Good afternoon, friends. How are y'all doing?
Hey, young man. We're rocking. Doing well.
Wonderful.
Cold. We had found a resource where we could go and pick up some pretty well-composted wood chips, and we've got a couple of buckets of it, and we've just got a limited, little carrier on the back of the car, and I tried to make it out yesterday to do a second load, but with the cold temperatures, it just didn't do it, so we've probably lost access to it now until we get warm enough weather to unfreeze the pile that we were digging in, just a nice resource.
That's nice. You need
it
about,
is. Life is good.
A couple of 10-wheelers of that.
Say again?
That would be really nice. You need a couple 10-wheeler dump loads of that great stuff.
Yes. Well, actually, it's interesting. I've been thinking about, where are we going to get wood chips? Where are we going to get this amendment for our garden and for what we're creating here? And there was a neighbor, maybe 10 or 12 blocks from here, and every time we go that particular route, there's this big pile sitting on his front lawn. We watched and looked, and there was a playground across the road. So, well, it's probably for the playground. And it sat there for, I don't even know how long, close to a year, maybe even more. And since we've been getting closer and closer to needing that resource, I had gone by the house late at night, early in the morning. The guy was just never there. So I finally last week left a note on his door and said, hey, are you using that wood chip pile? It doesn't seem to be being touched. Would you be willing for us to come grab some of it? And he called me and says, yeah, man, come on. We thought they were going to use it for the playground. They didn't. And we thought the city was going to come and get it, and they didn't. So you're welcome to it. And by the way, that's my business. We got as many loads of that as you want. Let me know and we'll deliver it. It's like, Okay, feel like the universe is taking care of us. The universe is taking care of us. So
that is
pretty cool.
Awesome.
Pretty cool.
I
mean, it was just what we were wondering about, and there it was.
Mm-mm-mm. That's garden gold.
Yep. Yeah, it is gold.
That is neat. I was very
restoration.
Blessed by the last. Yeah. Very blessed by the last conversation. That was really a neat call. Very nice.
Sweet, yes.
Very nice. And I wanted to, if I may, go forward with, first, I think back a couple calls ago, I'm not quite sure, but Shanti Christo may have been on your call or another. And I was unfamiliar with that term, and I looked it up, and it seems to mean the peace of Christ. Wondering if it was your show, if you wanted
that was actually Dr. Tim's show, and
okay.
Yeah, and he had mentioned it was part of the Way of Mastery that he was reading, and it talked about that.
Okay, thank you, Jeannie.
And by the way, in Aramaic,
mm-hmm.
where the Yeshua was supposed to have said, "My peace I leave to you, my peace I give to you," actually in Aramaic, the more proper word there would be serenity. Not peace, but serenity. And my former partner in translating the Aramaic Kavura's manuscript really used to like to make a point of that particular thought, and that peace was actually a war word, that it came out of war and was generated as an alternative or to counteract war, but in fact was still based in resistance to war, and that what Yeshua came forward was a statement of inviting people into the serenity that he held at having, my take would be, at having done the work of forgiveness and alleviated himself of the generational burdens of all hostility and fear. And it leaves one in their natural state, which is serenity.
Wow.
So the serenity of Christ would be another level of that, that it's our invitation into that.
So we need to take peace a step further into serenity.
Yes.
Because peace, as you mentioned, and I've not heard that before, it's a war word. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, my partner in doing the Kavura's manuscript, he's now passed. His name was Dan McDougall. He was an attorney. Very precise in his use of language. And that's what really led to, you know, he originated the project and directed the project. I became co-director of the project. And then when he passed, I was appointed to the foundation. But it was he that directed it. In the original translation work, there were 25 of the world's top Aramaicists that were participating in that project. And he was really a stickler on, we need to get back to knowing what the first century meanings of those words are. If we're going to understand the man, we got to know what he said. And if we're working with inadequate or incorrect definitions, then we can never arrive at his teaching. And that was a really a major focal point for these 25 translators. And basically what had to happen in order to consider the translation verified, it still wasn't, you know, as he set up the direction of it, translation of a particular word was still not verified, even if all 25 translators agreed on it. It's like, that was pretty good evidence, but he was a lawyer, and he used the rules of evidence and how things get into a courtroom and how they impact the outcome of a judgment made by a judge. And the final verification of the meaning of a word was, if we put it into the courtroom, or pardon me, into the classroom, did it stand up and did it produce the result it was purported to produce? If it didn't, it was back to the drawing board, and we need to know what that word means. We still don't know. Mm. And that was the circle that each word that was translated went through. He guided the translation work. My job was to take it into the classroom and see if it worked. And that's what honed each of these tools out to something that, you know, you don't have to believe a darn thing. In fact, I usually say to people, don't believe any of it. But just take it and try it and watch what happens. Because it's accurate, because it's true, it works, that's all. It's nothing to believe. So many people go with this thing of believe, and never take it into testing mode to see, is this really true? Is this really accurate? Does it work? Because if it doesn't work, it obviously isn't true. So that was kind of the standard that was set for determining the veracity of a particular translation.
Our words are so important.
Well, according to Yeshua, he says, here's how important it is. The power of life and death is in your words. That's pretty important. That's pretty important. You better get to the right ones. I shouldn't say the right ones, because that implies right and wrong, but to get to the accurate ones, to get to accurate understanding.
Yes, that'd be a way to say the more accurate translation of Shanti Christ would be the serenity of Christ then.
Yes.
Instead
of
peace of Christ. Thank you.
How I would, you know, expand on that statement would be, may the serenity that exists in the mind of love in you, which we call the mind of Christ, fully incarnate and flood your physiology so that you get to the physiological experience of it. Incarnate it, bring it into form.
Beautiful.
And of course, to do that, there can't be a space with anything other than serenity in you, which means you have to do your work. And many people want to touch it on Sunday morning, and then now I go about and do my bit, just like that where the woman is caught in adultery, and Yeshua turns and he writes something in the sand, and each of the accusers disappear.
Mm-hmm.
They're so righteous, and they're going to condemn her for this terrible wrong. Now, there's no recording of what Yeshua wrote in the sand, but I suspect it went something like this. He got off to the side. He didn't want to embarrass anybody, but he knew how to read each person's mind. So he went, A.B., imagine the finger motion. A.B., come here. And he writes in the sand, remember last Tuesday and you were with the neighbor's wife?
Mm.
And A.B.'s like, uh-oh, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here.
Oiving, come here. And he wrote in the sand, oh, yes. And one by one, reading why they were in such violence that they were willing to have this woman stoned to death, Paul said it really well. Beware you who judge another, for they want you to judge another. You have been guilty of practicing. Now, nobody believes that because they're so dissociated from the content of their own minds, but that's where it is. And so, finally he turns to the woman and he says, woman, where are your accusers? And I can imagine she's overjoyed and is like, I don't know, but you did a great job. Thank you. And then he says, and now recognize that those energetic patterns don't work anymore. Stop it. Don't do it anymore. Get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than he goes into the big condemnation game that so much of churchianity does. The only people who condemn are the people who have done it themselves and haven't resolved it in themselves. It's kind of like the old statement, you never look behind the door unless you've hidden there yourself.
Yeah, interesting.
takes a deep understanding of the mind for someone to come up, you know, with the insight that he came up with. I mean, when I think about it, 2,000 years ago, it's just so monumental. So monumental.
Mm-hmm. Those words are very important. And speaking of words...
So I hold the space that this holy day season becomes for you and every listener and us, everyone who's in earshot or ever will listen, that serenity is incarnated fully in physiology for each and every one of us and becomes the state we live from.
Yes. Have that serenity of the Christ mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard the explanation of the Christ Mass.
Christ Mass?
Yes, I got that. Thank you. And
you're
welcome. Holy Days. And the reason that caught my eye on the Christ Mass is that many years ago now when I was doing my deep dive into religions and where some of these traditions came and even the words came, I don't remember where. I've got it somewhere, but there was a group that kind of held to these beliefs that was not such a good term because it meant a mass means the sacrifice of somebody on the altar, and that is really meaning the sacrifice of Christ. And
well, that's an interesting definition for the word mass.
Yes, and I picked up on that because I was raised in the Catholic tradition, and I was very familiar. As familiar as could be for many years of the mass itself, and when one looks into that, it is an interesting correlation there. So I'm just going to share that why it caught my eye and
interesting
and why I kind of shied away from that for a long time, and now I'm seeing a different side of the
right.
Christ and the mind of Christ, and even as you shared earlier, the serenity of the Christ mind now is so beautiful. So,
right. Well, my take on the Catholic perspective of that, I mean, there was the sacrifice game that was put in there, and I think that was put in by minds who didn't understand and therefore, you know, held to their unresolved trauma. But you know, as far as the Mass goes, it was a celebration of bringing literally the essence, the energetic essence, which would be the serenity of Christ, into a physical vehicle, which was the water and wine, a symbol for receiving that higher energetic input. So celebrating the receiving of it as opposed to the sacrifice of it. That would be more my take. I can imagine how somebody would perhaps go into that degraded aspect of it, but that's nowhere near anything that I think, or I would think it would be very rare to find anybody in Catholicism at any official level that would utilize the word mass to represent that lower energy. I think you'd have to go a long way to find that.
Yes, interesting thoughts there, Michael. I appreciate that other perspective, and that really matches up more with the serenity of the Christ mind.
Yes. Yeah, it was a way for each person to be in reverence and receive the essence of his energy. You know, essentially tying back into that one healing experience that's described in the scriptures, it was a way for everybody today to touch the hem of his garment and be touched by it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my take on why anyone would go to and celebrate a Mass, why a priest would celebrate a Mass, why anybody would go to it, would be to be touched by the hem of his garment. And, you know, the theology in the Catholic Church, that this idea that we can bring in, that there's this transformation that changes the structure, the essential nature of the wine and the wafer, so that it can be received by the individual. And that's a powerful, powerful imagery. If you go back to the metaphor that, or the idiom that "eat my body and drink my blood" meant when Yeshua spoke it thousands of years ago, it was a metaphor for you've got to, you know, when they said, well, how do we do this? He said, eat my body and drink my blood. And it really meant you have to inculcate everything that I have inculcated and come to the place where you can hold the space of love as I'm holding the space of love. In the particular instance where that idiom was used, half of his audience, I mean, if in fact it were just about wine and wafers, and if that's what he had said 2,000 years ago, well, you got to take wine and wafers communion, why would half of the disciples who've been with him for some time turn their noses up, turn away, walk away, saying, too hard a saying, like, what's hard about taking communion?
Mm-hmm.
But he was inviting them into that deeper level of doing the work he'd done so that they too could show up as the serenity of the Christ mind, or in the serenity of the Christ mind. And, you know, it was probably Abe and Oyving that were there, like, no, I don't want to give up my trysts every Thursday at the neighbor's wife when her husband goes off to, you know, I don't want to have to give up the extra profit I've got because I've got that other, you know, customer down the street that I get to, you know, twist for an extra few bucks every month. No, I don't want to give that up. Too hard a saying, I'm out of here. I don't, you know, it's like the offerings of the ego mind, you know, there's... It ties back in for me to that commandment, quote unquote commandment, that said, have no false gods or graven images before me. The mind of man, the perceptual constructs of man, can come up with so many enticing graven images, perceptual constructs. Oh, look, we get to blame Bill for the fact that we're enraged. It's not our fault. It's not our sin that we're enraged. See, Bill did it to me. And that's an enticement to go, oh, I can do blame of Bill and I can pretend I'm innocent and I haven't done anything. And I'm doing great. It isn't me. It's Bill's fault. They're the kind of graven images that we're being talked about. And they're enticing. They seem to offer so much. And I was actually working with someone just the other day who had engaged in what would be called an illicit type affair, and it was like, well, but that's so wonderful for me, I don't want to give it up. And it's like, well, that's an interesting carving in your mind, that's an interesting graven image and very attractive, but what you sacrifice for that is, in order to join with that, to become one with that enticement from your mind, if you give up integrity and the connection to the actual presence of love. It's like such a measly offering that the mind gives in every case. And that's
so
where the rubber hits the road to me.
Mm-hmm. Graven image, then, it would be anything that takes us away from our truth. That
correct.
We decide to grieve the opposite way. Perception.
Exactly. The mind of man, perception. And where does Satan live but the mind of man? If you look at the Aramaic word Satan, and it's a very real concept and something very important to understand, but it's got nothing to do with the guy with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. As the word was used in the first century by the Aramaic Yeshua, the word Satan means the reason. It's a lowercase word, not an uppercase word that's a name of an individual. But it's a lowercase word that speaks of the resistor, one who misleads. When I was processing this person who'd been involved in an illicit affair, I invited her to say, you know, I'm going to go back to integrity. And it was like, but oh, what do I give up for that? It's like, well, that's one perspective, but what do you gain for that? You say you want relationship with the Creator, but what in essence you're saying, you say you want the presence of active love in you, but what you're trading that for is physical pleasure. It's like, hello. And it was just like, you know, monumental opening, you know, have no false gods or graven images. The perceptual mind, the constructs of the mind are what produce these images out of resistance that entice us, you know. Mm-hmm. Go back to Paul, who didn't have a clue what forgiveness meant. We can verify that by the fact that he acknowledged himself. You know, why is it the things I would do? Like what I hear him saying there is, in my being, in my soul, in my essence, I know what I want to do. I know what I should be doing. Why is it that I cannot do that, and the things I hate are what I do? The offerings from carbon-based memory, the offerings from the mind of the past, tradition, culture, enticed him so deeply that he couldn't even do the behaviors that he wanted to do. And that's the condition of most people, because these graven images are dolled up to look so enticing when, in fact, they're just, you know, tin offerings. Compared to the real thing.
Mm-hmm. The unfortunate situation with this person is very similar to 2,000 years ago with the 50%. It's too hard, and it's so hard for many of us. And we each have to cross that path and decide.
To me, that's the beauty of the tool of forgiveness, because. And why it needs to be used repeatedly in different situations, because the titillating energy, the impetus, the emphasis, the strength of that offering from the mind through perception, time forgiveness is applied there, weakens that, the attractiveness, the strength of that energy just a little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit. It's not likely going to crack and fall apart all in one shot. But as you continue to do your work, all of a sudden, you know, there comes a point where critical mass is reached and the shine of that offering all of a sudden is gone. And it's like, why would I bother when I can have this?
Much more beautiful place to be.
Absolutely, 2,000%. So joining you in that, and the show's going to cut us off any second. I just got the 10-second mark, so I'll just say thank you for the questions. Thank you, everybody, for participating, and have a wondrous, happy Christmas and holy days and the best year yet of your eternal life coming up. Blessings. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you.